Chapter 15, The Most Beautiful Thing. Kofi spent the next few days training with Thornkeep's Dorajas. She'd learned first that there were 6 Doraja orders. Now she was discovering that, within those orders, there was a significant amount of room for variety. She spent one day with a stocky boy named Izem, a Doraja in the Order of Maisha. He showed her how, with a single touch, he could make a flower bloom or wilt on command. Another day, she met Onyika, a tall, limber Doraja in the Order of Mwili, with an affinity for mending broken bones. Some of the Dorajas were what McKennock privately called loyalists, those who were sympathetic to Fedu and supported his plans, but there were plenty of others, she found, who wanted to leave as desperately as she did. The Dorajas in that group took time to help her with the splendor when they could, coming up with exercises that helped her practice using it in secret. It was, she realized, the first time in her life that she had some semblance of a real community. In her spare time, Kofi still ventured to the library too, though her progress there was far slower than her progress in working with the Splendor. She still hadn't found any books that even mentioned the Order of Vivuli, let alone any details about other Dorajas in that order. She already knew, from her lessons and from Badwa, that being a Doraja meant it was in her blood, a trait she'd inherited from a direct family member. But she had no idea who that family member might be. She thought hard about Mama, wondering now if she'd ever shown Kofi something by mistake. She was good with animals. Perhaps she was in the Order of Maisha. If that was true, though, it still beggared the old unanswered question. Why hadn't she spoken with Kofi about any of this? A thought came to her, one that stung. Maybe her Doraja blood hadn't come from her mother's family at all. Maybe it had been Baba. That would make a lot of sense. Baba had died years ago, and in his death left she and Mama with so many burdens that weren't theirs to carry. Maybe Mama had associated being a Doraja with him, with all of his bad choices. It was plausible, but Kofi still couldn't quite justify it in her mind. She decided then that when she did get back to Lakosa, it was a question she would ask. Thinking of Lakosa, of course, made her think of Ekon, and Kofi felt a pang as his face filled her mind. Ekon had been hardest to think about during her time at Thornkeep, mostly because she was least sure of what had happened to him when she left. Had he been arrested? Had he escaped? Had he moved on with his life? Those were unanswered questions too, but Kofi wasn't sure if she was ready for all of the answers to them. When McKenna came to her bedchamber to retrieve her the following evening, Kofi was dressed and ready. Her lesson tonight was with Zane, and she was more than a little curious about what it might entail. An anticipation bubbled through her as they walked to the study where he'd asked to meet, though Kofi couldn't discern why. "You okay?" McKenna asked when she noticed Kofi walking faster than usual. "Yeah," said Kofi. "I guess I'm just nervous." McKenna threw her a sly look. "I'd say when it comes to Zane, that's normal." Kofi's cheeks warmed. "What do you mean?" "Just that Zane's affinity is," she paused, look for the right word, "strange." "Strange?" "I say it lovingly," added McKenna. "What is Zane's affinity?" Kofi asked. "Trust me, it's easier for you to see it for yourself." Finally, they reached a door Kofi had never seen before. Like most of Thornkeep, its wood was dark. McKenna knocked twice, and her fist was still raised when Zane swung the door open. Tonight, he wore a plain blue tunic. "Good evening, ladies," he said cheerfully. "McKenna, I see you're in better spirits tonight." "Zane?" McKenna said in a clipped tone. "I've brought Kofi for her lesson with you. I will return for her in 1 hour." "Great." Zane rubbed his hands together. "Well then, in that case, we'll just—" He stopped as McKenna raised her index finger, pointing it inches from his nose. "I haven't forgiven you for that stupid stunt you pulled at the stables," she said in a low voice. I want you to know that if so much as a single hair on my friend's lovely head is out of place when I come back, if she has so much as a scratch, I will personally put my foot...
Say no more, Kenna, Zane said quickly, wincing. I promise we'll just go over the basics tonight. He looked over the top of her head so that his eyes met Kofi's. She's in good hands. Kofi didn't know why the way Zane was looking at her made her stomach swoop.
Oh, she better be, said McKenna testily. Or you will certainly not be.
She gave him one more reproving look before turning to head back down the hallway. Zane watched her go with a kind amusement mixed with real wariness. You've got yourself a very good friend there.
Yes, Kofi smiled because she knew it was true. I do.
Well, if we only have an hour, we'd better get started. He moved aside and held the door open. After you. Kofi stepped inside the study, and Zane closed the door behind them. Like the library, it wasn't particularly big, but it was neat in the extreme. A tall bookcase was placed in one corner, and the room's only other furnishings were a chair and a desk with a pitcher of water and some goblets.
Is this your study? She asked.
Sort of, said Zane. I commandeered it for myself some time ago. It's got the best view in all of Thornkeep. Kofi glanced out the window involuntarily. Zane's study faced the north garden, and in the dusk, its red flowers looked set ablaze. It was, admittedly, a great view.
So, he said, sitting on the edge of the desk, let's start with the easy things. How much do you already know about the Order of Akile?
Not much, Kofi admitted, just that it's the Order of the Mind.
Zane nodded. Besides the Order of Vivuli, the Order of Akile is probably the hardest to conceptualize because it's cerebral.
He tapped the side of his head. The mind is a complicated place.
Sure. Now, like the rest of the Duraja orders, there are subgroups within the Order of Akile. There are some within my order who are simply very intelligent. They're able to recall things at inhuman speeds. Some within my order are telekinetic. They can move things without touching them. And still, there are the rarities, like the polyglots, who can fluently speak any language they hear. Anyway, you get the picture.
So what's your affinity within it? Kofi asked.
I'm what's called an illusionist, Zane explained. When I summon and channel the splendor toward a certain person or people, I can make them see what I want for as long as I want. I can conjure a person's sweetest dreams or most wretched nightmares. I can also make people see things that aren't there or vice versa.
Really? Said Kofi. That's sort of terrifying.
Zane's eyes danced. Watch. He pulled one of the books from the shelf and placed it on his desk. Kofi stared at it a moment, wondering what he was going to do with it. And then she found herself wondering why she was staring at an empty desk. She looked up at Zane, mystified.
It's still there, isn't it?
Zane nodded, and when Kofi looked at the desk again, sure enough, the book had not moved.
That's incredible.
Oh, please. Zane fanned himself with a hand, pretending to be embarrassed. Flattery will get you everywhere.
Could I see what it's like, she asked, when you create illusions in dreams and nightmares?
Zane's brow rose instantly.
I don't think so.
Kofi frowned.
Why not?
Firstly, because it's much harder for me to work on a person who's awake. I have to summon more of the splendor, which makes the illusion much more intense, he said. And second, because I just told McKenna that we were only going over the basics tonight, you do recall what she made me promise her.
Kofi huffed. Zane.
Look, you've never seen McKenna when she's really pissed off, he said seriously. I, on the other hand, have. Trust me, an intimate bubble bath with a porcupine is more pleasant.
We don't have to tell her.
The words tumbled out of Kofi's mouth, surprising her. She flushed as Zane looked at her with new interest.
Ooh, secrets. He wiggled his fingers and a devilish smile pulled at his lips. Well, in that case, I'm in. He rose from the desk, then pointed to the chair behind it. All right, you're going to need to sit down for this. Kofi tempered the hum of excitement that coursed through her as she made her way around the desk and settled in the chair. It was made from a soft, worn leather and smelled of pine. Okay, so some ground rules, he said. I'm only going to keep you in for a few minutes. It'll feel longer, trust me. If I start to see you react badly, I'm pulling you out, no questions asked, and we will never speak of this to McKenna. Deal? Deal, said Kofi. The smile returned to Zane's face. He moved in front of the chair and bent so that his arms were on either side of her. She made herself keep breathing as her heart began to pound. I don't need physical contact, he explained, but it's easier for me if I have it. That said, I'm all about respecting boundaries, so... He met her gaze and held it. Can I touch you? A sudden heat pulled somewhere below Kofi's navel. What? To do the exercise, said Zane. She didn't like the amusement in his eyes now. Can I touch you? Ah, Kofi swallowed. Yes. Excellent. Zane covered her hands with his own. I'll just need you to look into my eyes. Kofi did, and the world around her went black. In her dreams, Kofi was in a jungle. She'd never seen this particular one before. Of that she was certain, and yet it was a familiar place to her too. Its air was thick, humid. She watched beads of condensation collect on the massive leaves, large enough for her to lie on. When she closed her eyes, she heard the melody of cicadas, and when they opened again, beetles with wings of deep violet and silver passed before her, chased by butterflies of every color and imagining. She breathed in the smell of fresh flowers. Home. This strange place felt like home. Kofi. Her heart jolted in her chest at the thrum of a voice she knew, quiet but warm. Slowly she turned, and the breath left her body in an exhale. Mama stood before her, smiling. Mama! You made it, little Ponya seed. She murmured the words into Kofi's hair as they embraced. After all this time, you made it home. I knew you would. Mama! Kofi tried to find the words as she blinked hard once, twice, then let the tears slick her cheeks. Mama smelled the way she remembered. Felt the way she remembered. Mama, I missed you, but where's... Kofi! Kofi and her mother looked up at the same time, and Kofi's throat tightened as Jabir stepped out from behind one of the jungle's trees to offer a small wave. I hope you don't mind if I join you. Mama held out her arm, welcoming Jabir as he folded into them. Kofi cried harder as he let his head rest against hers. He was taller than she remembered. We're going to be all right, Mama said in a voice only loud enough for them. Just us three. We're together now. We're going to be all right. Kofi believed that, more than she believed in anything else. This was her home. This place in the arms of the two people who loved her most. This was home, and she would stay. Kofi! Kofi stiffened in her mother's and Jabir's arms. The third voice she'd heard in the jungle didn't belong to either of them, and it sounded wrong. They kept their arms locked tight around her, but she turned and peeked over their shoulders. Then she froze. Another boy was standing a few feet from them, and this one was not smiling at all. He had tightly coiled hair and full lips. The last time she'd seen him, he'd been wrapped in a linen death shroud, but now that was gone. His body was covered in horrible gashes, lacerations. Kofi knew him. Sahel? Kofi stammered. The silvery Sahel faltered as though surprised she'd actually spoken to him. He stared at her, curious.
Sahel, it's me. It's Kofi, she said, from the Night Zoo.
She watched as his expression twisted into a grimace.
Give it to me.
Sahel's voice was wrong. It was thin as an evening breeze, hushed.
Give it to me.
What? Kofi tried to pull out of Jabir's and Mama's arms, but they were still holding her.
Give what to you?
The payment, he said softly, like a lover. I cannot go to the Godlands without it.
He took a step forward, his gait stilted and uneven. Kofi's eyes wandered down to the rest of his body and noted the wounds, the bite marks and scratches. It had been bad enough when Kofi thought those wounds had been inflicted by the Shaitani, a monster. To know now that Sahel had in fact died at the hands of warriors made them impossibly more chilling.
Sahel.
Her voice barely carried above a whisper.
What are you talking about?
Give it to me.
The boy was closing the gap between them, a strange, hungry gleam in his eyes. She recognized that hunger. She'd felt it herself.
Perhaps he will accept your hair, your eyes, your blood. Perhaps I'll pay him that way.
A chill skittered up Kofi's arms. Sahel, stop! Again, she tried to pull herself from Mama's and Jabir's grasp, but they held her tight, too tight.
Let go of me, Mama.
Kofi pulled away with all her might.
Jabir, please, you have to let...
The rest of the words died in her throat. When she turned and looked at her arms, she was not in her mother's arms. She was in Fedu's. A scream rose in her throat as she tried to pull away from the god, but his fingers dug into her flesh. He smiled.
Come now, dull knife, he said softly. Do not resist.
More people were beginning to emerge from the woods, but Kofi understood now what they were, the untethered. She saw men, women, the old and the young. She saw weeping mothers carrying their stillborn babies, men with gaping wounds earned in battle. Emaciated children wandered toward her with distended bellies and hollowed faces. None of them had eyes. Give it to us. Their voices were one horrid chorus. Free us. A mist was rising from the earth, and the sky above was green. Kofi looked down at her feet and watched as thorns snaked around her ankles to hold her in place, to hold her as the untethered drew nearer. Free us. Free us. Sahel was approaching again, his mouth open in a silent wail. One of his transparent hands was outstretched, reaching for her. Any moment now, he would...
Kofi!
Kofi's eyes shot open, and then they burned. Zane was kneeling before her, his brown eyes wide with fear. It took Kofi a second to reorient herself. She was not in the jungle now. She was in Zane's study. None of it, Mama, Jabir, Fedu, and the untethered, had been real. For several seconds, she could only stare at Zane, breathing hard. Here. Zane stood and grabbed the pitcher of water from the desk, as well as one of the goblets. Drink this. Kofi accepted the goblet without a word and tipped it to her lips. As soon as the cool water touched her lips, she felt herself calming. Over the rim, she could see Zane was still watching her, shaking his head.
I'm sorry, he murmured. That was foolish.
Kofi wanted to contradict him, to tell him that, as scary as that had been, she was glad to know what he could do. She wanted to say that aloud, but she couldn't. Her tongue wouldn't work, and her body felt unbelievably heavy. Every time she looked at Zane, she was struck by the contradiction of it. How could a person who looked so kind create something so monstrous? Zane put his head in his hands, looking positively forlorn.
Oh, I might as well get my affairs in order, he lamented. McKenna is going to end me.
She's not. We're not going to tell her.
Zane looked up from his hands, confused. It took more effort than normal, but Kofi forced herself to sit upright in the chair.
Thank you, she said, for showing me that.
Zane stared at her in disbelief.
What we're planning to do, leaving Thornkeep, is going to be dangerous, said Kofi slowly. It's going to be difficult.
She sighed. I can't keep having these lessons where all I do is play with the splendor. At some point, I have to push myself harder, or I won't be ready.
Zane's expression changed, softened.
You don't want to push yourself too hard, though, Kofi. The splendor...
I don't want you to go easy on me.
She met his gaze and hoped that she looked stronger than she felt. Promise me that. A beat passed before Zane nodded.
I promise.
Thank you. How much time do we have left before McKenna comes back?
A good amount, said Zane, but I really think you've done enough for one lesson.
Kofi didn't argue.
Fine, but can we at least talk about the plan? How I'm actually going to get us out of here when the time comes?
Sure. He crossed the space between them and sat on the desk again.
We don't know where Thornkeep is situated in relation to the rest of Ashoza, he said. Fedu is able to bring us here without going through the Mistwood because he is a god, able to travel in ways a mortal cannot.
Of course he can, she said bitterly.
So we're not exactly sure in which direction we should leave, he went on. But we think our best bet is to go north.
So we'd go through the North Garden, said Kofi. And then into the Mistwood from there.
Zane nodded. Najiri is still doing some reconnaissance, trying to figure out which Jirajas are actually loyal to Fedu and which ones are pretending but secretly want to leave. As of now, there are 15 Jirajas in our group, counting myself, McKenna, Zola, Amon, and Najiri.
15. It wasn't a huge number, but Kofi was daunted by it.
What you're going to do is use your splendor to create a path, much like the one you created when you and McKenna were trying to get out of the Mistwood the first time, said Zane. But instead of trying to get back here, you would direct the splendor to show you a way home. We'll just follow you from there. I'm sure she's already told you, but Zola's engineering weapons that can be fortified with the splendor. We can use those if we run into the Untethered.
Kofi took a deep breath in.
What's wrong?
Whenever I've used the splendor to guide me to something, I've always had a very specific target in mind, she explained. The first and second time, I was looking for an individual person. The third time, I was just trying to get back to Thornkeep. She faltered. I don't know if the splendor will show me a path forward if I don't even know what I'm looking for. What if I get tired in the middle of the Mistwood? What if I get lost? What if the splendor doesn't work? What if...
Kofi, Zane's voice was gentle. Trust yourself.
She shook her head.
It's not about trusting...
It is, he insisted. I'll show you. He moved to stand by the window, gesturing for her to come over too. Slowly, carefully, Kofi rose. Her eyes wandered past the flowers and fountains until they found the start of the Mistwood. Even from here, she imagined she could feel its chill. I want you to try to summon the splendor again, said Zane. Obviously, we can't repeat exactly what you did when you saved McKenna, so tonight, just focus on the most essential thing, summoning it, getting used to the feel of it. Kofi took a deep breath. Zane made that sound so easy, but she didn't know whether she could do it. The remnants of the nightmare still lingered in her mind, and she wasn't sure she could clear her head enough. But he was looking at her with an expectation now. All right. She took a step back from Zane, giving herself some space. I don't know if this will work, but I'll try. She closed her eyes and tried to clear her mind, tried to do what Badwa had taught her. One by one, she acknowledged her emotions. She was tired, sometimes still sad, but hopeful, and she clung to that. She took a breath, once, twice, a third time, and then reached for the splendor. There was a pause as she waited for it, for that tingle to start in her feet. But it didn't come. Kofi screwed her eyes shut tighter. "Come on," she urged. "Please." The splendor did not answer. It wasn't going to come. Kofi bit down on her lip hard until she tasted blood. She had more power in her body than the other Dirajas in this place, and the splendor still didn't deem her fit enough to answer her when she called. She felt the cold press of doubt as it began to seep into her consciousness, all the voices in her head that told her to give up. "You're weak. You're stupid. You're a coward. You're not worthy of this power." "No." Kofi pushed against those voices. They weren't real, and she reminded herself of that. She reminded herself that she didn't have this power by chance. She had it because Adia had given it to her, entrusted her with it. Adia has deemed her worthy of this power because she was worthy of it. She was not weak. She was strong. She called the splendor again, and this time it came in an onslaught. She felt it rush through her, building in her chest until it strained against her ribcage. "Too much," a new voice in her head warned. "Too much." But she didn't pay attention to it. Instead, she opened her eyes and saw that the study was now full of tiny flickering speckles of light. They floated lazily around her, casting a golden luminescence on everything they touched, the books, the desk, Zane's face. He was staring at her now, in shock. Kofi took a deep breath and called the splendor back to her. One by one, the flickering lights dimmed, but Zane hadn't taken his eyes off her. "Was that okay?" It took Zane a moment to respond. He looked transfixed. "That," he said quietly, "was the most beautiful thing I've seen." Kofi felt a new heat in her core that had nothing to do with the splendor. She was suddenly keenly aware of how close Zane was. She watched the way the dying light accentuated one side of his face, the curls in his hair, and the curve of his jaw. She found herself wondering what would happen if she took one small step closer. She did, and Zane's eyes dropped to her lips. When she looked up again, there was a question in his eyes. She nodded. Zane's fingers encircled her wrists, tugging her closer still. He bowed his head, and Kofi closed her eyes. She held her breath then, waiting, wondering what would happen next, wondering if... There was a loud bang, and Kofi and Zane sprung apart. For a moment, Kofi didn't understand what she was seeing. Amon was standing at the door, his eyes wide. Not McKenna, Amon. Something clicked in Kofi's mind. That wasn't right. Amon wasn't supposed to be here. His face was shiny with sweat, his breathing labored. He looked as though he'd been running, running for his life. "We need to get outside," he whispered. There was tremble in his voice. "Something bad has happened."